Welcome to another episode of the Cook, Eat, Nourish podcast with me, Fiona Staunton of Fiona's Food for Life. Today I'm talking with Anna Mapson of Goodness Me Nutrition, all about IBS, irritable bowel syndrome. She has a wealth of knowledge about this topic that is often not openly discussed. So be sure you listen to the end to find her three tips to help improve your health, particularly around IBS. I hope you enjoy the episode. Good morning, Anna. Thank you for joining me. Would you like to introduce yourself to my audience?
Yes, thank you so much for having me. I'm Anna Mapson and I'm an IBS nutritionist. So I work with people to help them get rid of painful and embarrassing kind of gut health problems like bloating, excessive gas and erratic bowel habits.
I'm sounds based in very, very specific.
Yeah. Well, I spend a lot of my time talking about farting, going to the toilet. So I get used to, you have to get over the embarrassment of talking about it. And it's something, it's really common, people with IBS. So it's something that people need a lot of help with. Yeah.
Okay. So what is IBS?
Irritable bowel syndrome. So it's thought that like between 1 in 5 and 1 in 10 people actually have it across the world. So it's pretty common at some point in your life, but it's essentially, there's two types, main sort of categorizations of IBS. Some people have more diarrhea predominant symptoms. So they have really loose stools, maybe lots of gas and pain. And other people will have constipation and not go to the bathroom very often. And again, it's associated with abdominal pain and excessive gas and reactions to food, all these kinds of things that sometimes people normalize and they think, well, it's just normal. I don't go to the toilet more than once a week, but actually that's not normal. And it's kind of embarrassing for people to go to the doctor about as well. So sometimes people don't go and get the help that they could be doing, and they could be eating a better diet and enjoying themselves more, like without the worry about these digestive symptoms.
And so what are the signs of IBS?
Well, it's either so that you don't, so with constipation, for example, it's that you go to the bathroom less than 3 times a week for, and you would have pain associated with a poo, abdominal pain. And then you would have these symptoms for more than 3 months. Like, so there's a sort of categorization. There's something called the Rome for categorization where they look at symptoms, or you're having very frequent loose stools. Maybe you're going, I've worked with people who've been having a poo 11 times a day. So that's pretty excessive, and lots of smelly gas. Maybe everything you eat sets you off. These are the kind of common symptoms of IBS.
Okay. Because I often think about it, particularly if I'm working, sometimes I teach within a school or I'm teaching students. And you think when you have a baby, the mother is always looking at the nappy and it's, you know, straight away, oh, they're constipated, they're this, they're that. And it's a really big thing when you have a young baby. But when they're older and they're looking after themselves, there's nobody really monitoring it, or, you know, so it does need to be spoken about so people know what is good for them and you know, what needs to be addressed.
Yes. And there's so much misinformation as well, you know, that online people can read all kinds of things about what is good gut health or what they should be doing or should be and seeing in the toilet. And actually can only be addressed right through the kind of the right information. So it's tricky all around. Yeah, there's that embarrassment factor, complications of kind of fake news or things out there that people don't really need to worry about. So it's challenging to start the process of getting help, I think, for some people. Yeah.
Okay. And what should you eat if you have IBS?
There isn't really one answer of what people should eat, because people will react to different things. So often it's about getting the right fiber content. So one of the first things people do is cut down on fiber when they feel like, oh, I'm getting really bloated after a meal, and perhaps I feel a bit uncomfortable, and I think it was because I had too many vegetables or too much fruit and that set me off, so I'm going to cut down on those foods. But over time, the problem with that is that you then start to lose some of the good bacteria in your large intestine where all the good bacteria live, and they love to eat fiber. So if you're cutting down on these high fiber foods, particularly people might try going dairy free, gluten free, and then if you're gluten free, you're cutting out a lot of whole grains. These are really good sources of fiber. So there is a couple of diets that have been tried and tested for people with IBS. One of them is called the low FODMAP diet, and this is really well tested. And normally, about 3 out of 4 people who go through this dietary intervention feel better. So it is got some good results and it's well researched, but not everybody will. So sometimes people will try it and they don't feel better. So 1 in 4 people might not. It's not a very intuitive diet, so it's quite hard to describe exactly what you would do, and it's hard to follow on your own. But essentially, you're reducing down portions of fermentable fibers. So it's not dairy free, it's not gluten free, but you are managing smaller portions of lactose from dairy, for example, smaller portions of the fructan, that's the fermentable type of fiber in wheat. And so by doing that, you're reducing down the amount of symptoms that you might get. So the FODMAP itself stands for fermentable oligosaccharides, disaccharides, monosaccharides, and polyols. Now, nobody needs to remember that, but you need to just know that each of those types of like sugars, so for example, the polyols, they are a type of alcohol sugar, and they are found in fruits and vegetables. You know, they're normal, healthy things. We don't need to avoid them. But for some people with IBS, they can trigger this additional bloating and gas, and sometimes it's loose stools because they're not very well digested in the small intestine. So when you eat these FODMAPs, these particles stay in your small intestine. And if you're not breaking them down properly, they kind of draw water in, which can then increase the volume of the stool. That can cause loose stools and diarrhea, or they can travel to the large intestine undigested, where the gut bacteria start to ferment them, and that can cause gas and bloating, and then, you know, that those really sensitive feelings that people with IBS get.
Okay. And so what would an ideal meal for someone on the low fat FODMAPs, what would their day look like?
Yeah, you can still eat things like oats. So you can have breakfast with oats and then small handful of berries or something like blueberries or a few seeds. Seeds are quite good for people with IBS. Then you can also have things like rice and meat and fish. The and pr all the like proteins, these are all fine. There's no FODMAPs in there. You can have potatoes. So then in the evening, then maybe you could have like potato. So you could have a rice and a stir fry, or potatoes with some, I don't know, steak and a few vegetables. Now, it's really tricky to say exactly what people can have, but some of the vegetables that are eaten more freely are like carrots, green beans, green peppers, portions of courgette. So it's not very intuitive. Like it's things like carrots and parsnips are fine, and yet sweet potato, butternut squash, you can only eat like up to 100 grams or up to 60 grams of those. So it's just not very intuitive. But the purpose of the diet is to take all these things out for 2 weeks. You strip all the foods out, the high FODMAP foods, and then you reintroduce them carefully. Well, 2 to 6 weeks is the sort of restricted phase. But the problem is people get stuck on that. If they don't want to start reintroducing the foods and challenging them and testing themselves. Because the idea is then you go through this careful reintroduction process, bringing the foods back in one at a time and noticing if you have any reactions so that you feel confident that you can eat those foods. And people are often quite surprised, like onions and garlic, for example. Everyone thinks, oh, if you've got IBS, you can't have those. But actually, they're not a problem for everyone, and a lot of people can eat them.
Okay. And what would be the I suppose red flag symptoms? When should someone, if they well, I suppose you tell me the answer. So when should they see a doctor? When?
Yeah, so sometimes IBS symptoms, well, ideally, people would have been diagnosed in the first place, because to get diagnosed with IBS, you have to have a lot of other things ruled out. So you have to have had celiac disease, for example, which is an immune reaction to eating gluten. That should be considered by a blood test, and you need to be eating gluten in the run-up to the blood test, because then your bodies will produce the antibodies to the gluten if you're someone who has celiac disease. And then other things that might be ruled out would be inflammatory bowel disease, again by a blood test, maybe a stool test to check if you've got any bacterial infections or parasites, something like that. And then other times, doctors might want to do a colonoscopy or an endoscopy. That's where they put a camera sort of up your bottom or down your mouth and look at the health of the gut lining. So these things are really important at the beginning, because then if you've had these other conditions ruled out, you know it's not IBD, you know it's not celiac disease or any of these other things, colon cancers, it's good to have them ruled out, because then you can just work on diet and lifestyle. If you were just to start launching into dietary interventions without having some of the medical checks first, you might be masking some of those symptoms. So other sort of red flags would be like continual bleeding out of your bottom or bleeding every time you have a bowel movement. Sometimes it's not a problem and it's just a hemorrhoid or like a little vein that's popping out and bleeding and nothing to worry about, but other times it can be a sign of a red flag. Things that are getting worse, like if your symptoms are getting steadily worse and worse and worse, I would say go back to the doctor and get checked. It could be like if you've got very significant abdominal pain as well, that's just not going away. Those are or if you're involuntary, not unintentionally losing weight as well, that would be like a big red flag. So those kind of things you'd always go back to your doctor and check. But if you're someone who knows you've got IBS, just to make sure that you've had a diagnosis first from a doctor in the first place.
And it's the type of thing that people would get flare-ups, as that tends to be how it
Yeah,
works.
it can really often come and go, and it's really normal for people to have good phases and phases where things don't work as well. Yes, definitely it can come and go.
Okay. And what else can they do other than the diet?
There is a lot actually around lifestyle changes. So really focusing on making sure you're eating really well. So a lot of people I work with are not eating three meals a day. So try to get people to eat regularly. And it can be hard when you're so scared of the symptoms that come if you bloat or you get pain every time you eat. People try to avoid eating, particularly if they need to go into the office or they've got to go on a long train journey or something. So eating regularly, eating mindfully, and what I mean by that is like sitting at a table if possible, so your body is upright, chewing your food really well. You know, the amount of people that eat on the go, or you eat when you're distracted, just watching telly and or in the car or something. And this is just not optimal digestion. So for some people it will be fine and you've got no issues, but where you've got a sensitive digestion, I really suggest trying to eat slowly and slowing down to eat. And then just other simple things around getting a bit of movement in each day. It helps to reduce our stress hormones, helps us to kind of reset, but also just really helps digestion and calming your body. So other things like would be, yeah, the movement and also trying to manage stress. This is a really big impact on IBS because of the gut-brain connection. There is a huge impact of how we feel and our like mental health and physical state and our digestion. So when we're stressed, you know, we have this fight or flight response. Our body's not optimizing digestion when you're in a state of stress and ready to run and fight. Your body takes all the blood away from the gut and that can interfere with your digestion. So anything that can make you feel more relaxed and calm, it will be a good thing for your IBS.
And yeah, and people can't see me smiling on the camera, but when you were saying about eating maybe on the go or standing up, that's one thing that I'm definitely guilty of. But then I don't have issues with my gut, so I can kind of, I suppose, get away with it. And what would you think about it? So I'm a big fan of fermented foods. What are your thoughts on fermented foods?
Yeah, for most people, I would say they're really good because they're adding in those good probiotic bacteria. And also, some of them, if you're having in kimchi or sauerkraut, you know, it's additional fibers as well. So it's a great addition. I would say some people with IBS who are really sensitive can be more sensitive to these foods, particularly kefir, because it's got lactose in it. So some people are really lactose sensitive with IBS. And then also the fermentation itself doesn't suit everybody's digestion. Sometimes the histamine content can be quite triggering for some people, especially if you've got like diarrhea and pain type symptoms. And some of the food, I was mentioning the FODMAP element. So sauerkraut, for example, white cabbage is kind of okay, but when it's fermented, the FODMAP elements go up. So like the sugar concentrate that is the thing that activates your symptoms could be a bit worse in fermented white cabbage, whereas the normal cabbage is okay. So it's complicated, I
Complex, yeah.
suppose. Is my answer to that. Sorry, it's not an easy yes or no, but personally, I think they're great. And sourdough bread as well is much easier to digest than, so there's reduced gluten, reduced fructan, which is the fiber content in the bread. So sourdough bread is often achievable for people with IBS, whereas eating two slices of, whole grain granary would be triggering for their symptoms.
And Anna, what got you into this area?
I retrained around, I think I qualified 7 years ago, just over 7 years ago. And before that, I trained for 3 years, but then before that, I was a management consultant working in financial services and not doing anything in this kind of space at all. And I was ill for about a year. I had a molar pregnancy, which is where it's quite rare, but the placenta in a pregnancy turns into a kind of tumor, and it's like a sort of cancerous growth. So I had to have a year off work, chemotherapy for really intensive for 6 months. And during that time, I just thought, I want to do something different. I want to do something that feels more aligned with me. And so I did go back to work for a bit, and then I took 3 years and retrained, had another daughter. I've got two kids, and then since then I've been working for myself. So
Wow. Sorry to hear that story. It's that sounds like a challenging time, but yeah, all things
yes, of
good
course,
now.
yeah. It's hard, and as you know, going through treatments and things is pretty life-changing in some ways. You come out different persons and feeling like I wanted to do something different. So yeah, I work for myself now, and I work with people all over the world, which I love, just from my little office in my house.
Fantastic. And so your Instagram handle is goodness me underscore nutrition, is that
Yeah,
correct?
that's right. Yeah.
Now you have IBS and SIBO nutritionist. What is SIBO?
Yes, SIBO is small intestine bacterial overgrowth, and this is a condition where there's too many bacteria basically in your small intestine. Normally, most of the bacteria should be in our large intestine, but in the small intestine, if they're there, they create a lot of fermentation. So they're not always bad bacteria, but they are doing their job in the wrong place. Sometimes they are bacteria we don't necessarily want too much of either, but they are there and in the small intestine cause a lot of bloating. So for people who bloat after everything they eat, maybe feel bloated first thing in the morning, even if they haven't eaten, as well as more systematic or systemic, I mean, type symptoms like brain fog, achy joints, these kind of real fatigue, because it can also interfere with nutrition absorption, which happens mostly in the small intestine. So people might be low in iron, have strange B vitamin readings on their blood tests. These kind of things might indicate SIBO. Yeah, so it's similar to IBS, and that's kind of a cause of IBS in a way as well.
Okay, yeah, thank you for explaining that one. And I notice as well that and I'll pop it into the show notes as well as all of your links. You're sharing an IBS workbook about five non-food tips people can start to use at home. So Anna, I always ask my guests if they can give the audience three tips that would help improve their health. So three takeaways from your area of expertise. What would they be?
Firstly, I would say trying to get as much diet variety as possible, and particularly in types of fibers. So there is a bit of research that says, the more we eat in terms of variety in fiber, and there's soluble fiber, there's insoluble, there's bulk forming, gel forming, there's all these kind of types of fiber, but actually the way to do it is just to eat lots of different plants, whole grains, nuts and seeds, pulses. Like the more variety you can get in that, the better it is for your digestion. People with IBS really struggle with that, but that's sort of what I help people to do, is to try and broaden out your diet to get all of those good nutrients. So aiming for 30 types of different fibers, if possible. It's quite a high target for some in a week. Secondly, I would say sitting on the toilet correctly. And some people might think, well, there's not much to it. But actually sitting the way we do in the toilet, on a toilet, is not the optimal way to let the poo out. And actually, if you can raise your feet up a little bit by putting a little step under your feet so that your knees are higher than your hips, this opens up all the muscles and just allows it to come out without straining. Especially important for people who have more constipation predominant symptoms. But if you can almost get back into a squatting position, so your knees are higher than your hips, you lean forward a little bit, and that just allows things to work much easier. So that's something anybody can do, and it reduces straining, it reduces time on the toilet, and it's quite a good habit to get even kids into if they're, struggling with constipation. It's something that it's not invasive, or don't even need to change very much. Just sitting differently on the toilet can help. And then thirdly, practicing some deep breathing. And part of this is about just trying to connect your gut-brain connection that I mentioned before, to relax that and to slow it down. But also really deep diaphragmatic breathing is like a sort of internal massage for your stomach and all your intestines. So it not only kind of helps your nervous system, but just sort of really physically helps before eating. So I try and encourage my clients to take three deep breaths before each meal. And that just really helps you get back into rest and digest mode and sort of really try to get all your digestive juices going. So those would be my three tips.
Fantastic. So eat more variety, aiming at 30 different plant types throughout the week. Practice your deep breathing before you eat, and then sitting on the toilet in the right way. So raising your feet almost in the squatting position. So I think they're really great practical tips. So thank you very much. Is there anything else that you would like to add in before we wrap up today's podcast, Anna?
No, only just to say, if you are struggling with IBS and you feel like, and you haven't been diagnosed with it, I would say don't be embarrassed about going to your doctor. Do try and go. Get any other things ruled out, because it can often put your mind at rest. And then there are lots of dietary and lifestyle things that you can do to work on to try and get your symptoms. So don't suffer in silence. Don't be embarrassed.
Yeah, so thank you so much. I think it's such an important topic to talk about, and hopefully this podcast gives people just a bit of thought provoking and to where they're at. And so thank you so much, Anna.
Thank you for having me. Great.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Cook, Eat, Nourish podcast. It would really help if you could rate and review the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. And please be sure to check out my website, fionasfoodforlife.ie, to see upcoming events and to get lots of recipes and tips. Happy cooking!